This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
March 2019. Join the hard-traveling fanboys as they celebrate Marvel Studios' release of Captain Marvel with Captain Marvel Month.
Coming to you live via tape delay from the Place to Be Nation inside the hard traveling fanboys L-shaped studio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, in Ho Ho Loon Plaza. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a new episode of the hard traveling fanboys.
This sounds like the opening to the Elizabeth Holmes phone sex hour.
Hi, everybody. I'm Elizabeth Holmes. And I'd like to welcome you.
You know, I haven't watched any of this stuff that you and Tim keep talking about in the legendary comics live chat, exclusive comics group chat. But you guys essentially are making her sound like Will Ferrell's Janet Reno.
You know, there's a lot of similarities. There's some Janet Reno from Bill Walton in there, and there's even a little bit of Buffalo Bill.
Truly, the three things you should most want to exemplify in life: Bill Walton, Will Ferrell's Janet Reno, and of course, Buffalo Bill.
I mean, I don't see a problem with it.
No, nor should you.
But yes, we are coming to you live. And the reason I was giving you that little introduction there is I've actually went out and I've invested money in the podcast, Nick. I have purchased via Amazon.com a podcasting microphone. Now, is it a good one? No. But it's a podcasting
microphone. It's a decent one.
It's fine. And we'll test it out tonight. And if I sound like crap, then we'll address that later on. But hopefully I sound all right, at least from an audio standpoint. Obviously my points never sound good, but the audio is what matters here at Hard Traveling Studios. Now, we are here being, of course, the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast
in
all of Place to Be Nation. We had a connection issue
that
there.
That was piss poor is what that was.
Yeah.
It felt like crap.
It did. We had a little bit of a malfunction at the junction, which is weird because we're in the same studio. Mm-hmm. You would think there wouldn't be any kind of like time delay, but space-time continuum issues, who are we to say?
I believe that is residual effects reaching back through the timeline from our forthcoming impending rewatch of Michael Cole versus Jerry Lawler at WrestleMania 27, which, as we all know, actually bends the space-time continuum.
Yes.
I think that's what's happening, is our future selves have been locked in this time paradox, and it is affecting our past selves.
Somehow this 30-minute wrestling match turns into a 3-day adventure.
Mm-hmm. Every time.
Now, what Nick's referring to, folks, is this is, of course, one of the most exciting weeks of the year. Not because there's anything particularly happening. I don't really care about March Madness tournament. It doesn't affect me. But what does matter this time of year is it's the annual mm-hmm. Greg Phillips and Nick Duke WrestleMania Marathon. Mm-hmm. This is where Nick and I, for the last, 10 years or so?
God, I don't even know. I don't even know, Greg. When did we first do it? I don't think we did it the first couple of years we knew each other, but I think we did do it before we made our first Mania trip for 24.
Oh, maybe. Wow, so that's going back over 10 years. We're talking about almost 11, 12 years here.
Yeah, because that was 08. So, yeah, this will be the 11th. Man, my Lord. Time flies when you're not having much fun at all, I guess.
This is, of course, where we, two of the coolest guys mm-hmm. in these here continental United States.
We are hip to be square, of course.
We gather together and we watch WrestleManias. We've themed it in the past. We used to just try to watch all of them back when there were so few that you might be able to get through that. We never did. We would we watch the best WrestleMania matches. We watch the worst WrestleMania matches. We watch the best total cards, the worst total cards. We'd mix and match, forgotten matches. Things of that nature. And this year, we're just going to go back and we're going to revisit some of our favorite live, or just in general, our live WrestleMania experiences. Mm-hmm. This will encompass the WrestleMania shows, some of the independent shows that we were at that we have access to via DVD or Blu-ray or streaming, and just have a good old time.
NXT takeovers?
At the house, yes. NXT takeovers.
Maybe some Hall of Fame. We don't know. We don't know where the weekend's going to take us.
You know, one thing might lead to another. We might even end up at Cookout.
Oh, let me tell you something. There's two things. There's three things that are going to happen this weekend. I'm going to watch a crap ton of wrestling. I'm going to eat some Cookout, and I'm going to eat some Hook's Barbecue. And there's a fourth thing that's going to happen. I'm going to absolutely destroy your bathroom.
I knew that was coming, Nick. I knew it. I know you better than you know yourself. So
maybe,
I knew.
Maybe we can work in a stop at the Goldfingers for some spicy garlic wings at some point.
We're not getting any spicy garlic wings this week.
I'm a grown-ass man. I can get whatever the hell I want to. You don't control me. I'll show up at your damn apartment with spicy garlic wings in hand. What are you going
to
do about it?
I control your access to my apartment.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You wouldn't shut me out. You're too kind-hearted. You're a damned fuel. A damned kind-hearted fuel.
Fuel. I am a fuel, but that notwithstanding. What we are doing, folks, is killing time, first of all, and we are bringing you another part of Captain Marvel Month here at the Hard Traveling Fanboys. This time around, we are going off the page to bring you a review of what's technically a movie. It's really the launch of a series, I guess, but it's also a movie that Marvel put out just last year, titled Marvel Rising Secret Warriors. And this is sort of featuring and headlining a different Marvel character, and that is Miss Marvel, portrayed by the character of Kamala Khan, who took over as Miss Marvel in the comics after Carol Danvers ascended into the role of Captain Marvel. So we've kind of introduced ourselves this month, Nick, largely to the characters of Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, of course, Mar-Vell, and now we will get a kind of a crash course introduction through television to Kamala Khan, a character that has grown quite the cult following, and even more than a cult following online and in real life. So, Nick, have you experienced or
in so long that I'm not sure what the status of that is? But yes, I have a very limited exposure to the character coming into this. And then this is kind of a very bare bones basic introduction to this character as well, from what I understand anyway.
Right. So this is a show that is available on Disney XD and the Disney Channel. Mm-hmm. In fact, I found it through Roku's Disney Now app, which you can pull up and access this. Although it's not in the movie section, it's in the TV section.
It's also by the way, Marvel, the Marvel HQ YouTube account, which is an official Marvel account, uploaded the entire thing to their YouTube channel this month as well as, a celebration of Captain Marvel's release. So that's where we actually watched it. Pulled it up on the YouTube app through my smart TV and sat down and watched it there.
And by we, you mean?
Yeah, I watched it with my daughter, Olivia, my four-year-old daughter. My three-year-old daughter was in and out of the room, as she often is at various points during the movie, so I can't really say that she watched it. But Olivia and I sat down and watched it together, which, it was to give credit where credit is due. For once in the history of the show, Greg actually had an idea for the podcast, rather than relying on me to be the creative genius behind everything you see and hear.
You know what you are? You're Vince Russo. You're trying to take credit for all the creativity behind the most successful era of the show.
Greg, quite frankly, fact, I'd suggest that justifiably no one's ego is bigger than mine. Good stuff.
Justifiably.
That justifiably no one's ego is bigger
what
than
a
mine.
Line.
What a great line. Yeah, man, we just revel in that one Vince line, and it's like one line is better than 8 years of Stephanie and Triple H heel promos. But we're getting off topic. We're
getting way off topic. Don't make me recite the Life Sucks and
with the cellulite.
That can't be me that I see in the mirror.
In the mirror?
With the small genitalia.
That's not fair.
You just have to face the facts that for a great many of you, the simple truth, life sucks, and then you die.
Yep, that's good stuff.
Anyway,
we are far afield. Anyway, so I remember at one point, Greg, way back when we decided to review Hulk and the Agents of Smash for the show, and you and I kind of savaged it, tore it apart. We did not enjoy it. We got some feedback from, it may have been Brad, maybe Steve Willie as well, saying that, hey, you know, part of the reason you didn't enjoy this is probably because it's not aimed at you, which is a fair point. But we were kind of trying to look at it from the perspective of, we remember, you know, when children's programming wasn't aimed strictly at kids. They tried to throw something, a little something in there for the adults, too, so that it could be all ages viewing, really. And something like, granted, nostalgia for us and bias colors this, but I think you and I both agree that stuff like Batman the Animated Series, X-Men the Animated Series, the entire DC animated universe really holds up in that regard of being both accessible for children and accessible for adults. But I digress. The point being, because a lot of these Marvel animation efforts in recent years are more focused on adult or kids, you know, we're not really in a great position to be the best arbiters of quality for this. So you suggested that I see if Olivia was interested in watching it, and she was. So last night we sat down and we watched it together, and it was a unique experience, to say the least.
Well, that's a very sweet and cute story, Nick, and I hope that you'll provide pictures to all of our fans on Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook.
There were no pictures. I will tell you that, you know, I've had the pollen
in the deep
south where we reside has been wreaking havoc on my allergies this week, and I've been laboring to breathe for the better part of 3 days. And as a result, when I get home from work, because I'm struggling to breathe all day, I'm just damn exhausted. So last night when we sat down to watch the movie, I probably fell asleep like 4 times throughout it. And every time I fell asleep and she noticed I was asleep, she would punch me in the chin to wake me up because she was annoyed, I guess, that I was not paying close attention to the thrilling plight of Miss Marvel and Squirrel Girl.
But you know what? You're holding up in your old age because you didn't get knocked out.
I did not get knocked out. The chin is, I have Rocky Balboa-like chin, and probably also Rocky Balboa-like brain damage.
Brain damage, yes. Anyway, yeah, so we thought that would be a cool kind of different perspective to add to things. And so in addition to Miss Marvel, this is not strictly a Miss Marvel movie. This is actually an introduction to the Secret Warriors, which is a team featuring, in this case, again, a team I know nothing about from the comics.
Nor I.
I remember the name over the years a few times. But this particular iteration features Miss Marvel, the unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Patriot, a.k.a. Del Wilkes, I believe, Nick, who famously challenged Bret Hart for the World Championship in 97.
Mm-hmm.
And transitioned apparently into being an African-American superhero. And also America Chavez, a character I know nothing about. And who else is in this team? Did I hit it? Oh, no. Daisy Johnson, a.k.a. Quake, who is portrayed actually by Chloe Bennett, who mm-hmm. plays the character on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the mm-hmm. live-action show. So that's kind of a cool bit of synergy there. And, of course, finally we have the character which is kind of who is introduced to everybody here, which is Dante Pertuz, a.k.a. Inferno. And that's sort of your list of Secret Warriors. Inferno, Quake, Miss Marvel, Squirrel Girl, Patriot, America Chavez.
And then a kind of a brief involvement from Captain Marvel along the way as well.
Right. So this kind of gets this started, and the show doesn't start with an origin for Miss Marvel or any of these characters, really.
Nope.
We get kind of thrown in as Kamala already has her powers. She's also balancing her life, as we learn, an Inhuman, with being a regular teenager going to school and all that. Squirrel Girl is her best friend, it may be revealed in dialogue, Nick, but I don't know if it's shown how she got her powers or what her deal is as far as the development of her powers. She's just kind of got squirrel abilities, has a squirrel best friend, but she doesn't appear to be an Inhuman because she refers to Kamala as an Inhuman sort of derisively at one point. And that's another thing. This movie is heavily steeped on the Inhumans, which you would think would give it a distinct disadvantage in our eyes, given that neither I nor anyone I know has ever given a single poop about the Inhumans.
Are you saying poop because it's a all ages show that we're reviewing?
Yes. This show is, I think, rated Y7, and so that's kind of the age group that it's aimed at. But I will say right off the bat, before we get any further, I think this show does a much better job of presenting interesting characters and telling a linear story than did Agents of Smash, which we referred to, which I thought did a wretched job and produced bad characters.
Well, I think it's because all the characters here are different. And part of the problem with Agents of Smash is essentially the characters were the same character.
Yeah.
There's only
and
so
they
many.
Took a character like She-Hulk and took away aspects that made her strong and great and different.
Yeah, I would agree.
But nonetheless, this here, we've got a lineup starring D. Bradley Baker, Chloe Bennett, Catherine Cavari, Mira Rohit Kubani, Camille McFadden, Tyler Posey, Sierra Ramirez, Kim Raver, Roger Craig Smith, who I have to say this about Roger Craig Smith. We know him mainly through his video game voice work, Nick, because he was Batman in Arkham Origins.
Mm-hmm. He was also Ezio in the Assassin's Creed.
Was he really?
Trilogy, yes.
Wow.
Chris Redfield in the Resident Evil series.
Wow.
And apparently he also voices Sonic the Hedgehog in the modern shitty Sonic games.
Yes, yes. So he's got, you know, a history of voice work that we're familiar with. And who else is on this cast? I got to go back now. Boo Boo Stewart. I know your favorite in the cast.
Boo Boo.
Who voices the villain of the piece.
Now, Greg, could you do me a favor and tell me what it would sound like if, in the course of discussing, you know, when this movie came out, if Booker T and Goldust were to review this movie, and it were to have to, they were have to discuss Boo Boo Stewart's performance.
Well, it probably sounds something like Boo 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 Stewart.
Thank you.
Something along those lines.
Yes.
And interesting. Speaking of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I didn't even know this, Nick. I just realized this.
Ming-Na Wen
does the voice of Hala the Accuser.
Also, sorry.
She's Agent May on
And to backtrack to the Roger Craig Smith thing, his role as Captain America is actually a reprisal. He also voices Captain America in both Avengers Assemble and Ultimate – or voiced it in Ultimate Spider-Man prior to that show's cancellation.
Very good. Very good. And – this show kind of, or this movie, picks us up with Kamala as sort of our point of view character. She is what I would consider to be the main character of the piece, with a brief aside for Squirrel Girl. But she's sort of the point of view character and introduces us to all of her other, these other teammates that she encounters. She already knows Squirrel Girl. Over the course of time, they meet Inferno and the guy that ends up being, the villain of the piece, who I will just say is called, I don't think this spoils anything to use his villain name, Exile. They meet him at the same time they meet Inferno, and at first it's not sure, you're not sure which one's the villain. And mistaken identities. You meet Daisy and Patriot, who are there as agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at the time. And you also meet America Chavez, who is a motorcycle mechanic, who we learn later on comes from an alternate Earth where her parents are killed as a result of a Kree, or not a Kree, but an Inhuman uprising. And so she doesn't have any real love for the Inhumans. And kind of the crux of this, to tie it into the old X-Men animated series, which was always about humans versus mutants and the prejudices therein, this show is kind of trying to position the Inhumans in that X-Men mutant role of humans don't trust Inhumans. And Inhumans, there's a batch of Inhumans that don't like humans at all, and they're the natural conflicts that arise for the people in the middle, the people that just want everybody to get along. Mm-hmm. And that's where Kamala lies. America is in favor, you know, against the Inhumans. You've got the character of I've already forgotten his damn name. The villain. What was his name again?
Exile.
Exile. He's, of course, very much pro-Inhuman. Kamala herself is an Inhuman, and so she finds herself torn, and it creates this basic backbone of this episode, which is about the the plot of this character, Exile, and his master, who turns out to be Hala, and their plans for the Inhumans and for the Earth as a whole, really, to expand the Kree Empire. And also, importantly, how these other characters react. America Chavez is very rough around the edges, doesn't want to join a team. Patriot wants to do everything by the book, wants to be Captain America, basically, his hero. And meanwhile, Squirrel Girl and Kamala, they just, you know, they want to live up to the legacy of Captain Marvel, who's their hero. Mm-hmm. So it does create a lot of interesting conflicts here for a show that remains, I mean, make no mistake, this is clearly aimed at young children, but I think it does a really good job, much better than we've seen in other recent Marvel animated efforts, Nick, of presenting interesting conflicts between characters and some subtext that I think kids will pick up on and take some messages out of.
Yeah, it's very much focused on diversity. You know, initially this was kind of developed as Marvel's answer to DC's Superhero Girls line of shorts and merchandise that was going to focus, mm-hmm. you know, that focuses all entirely on the female characters of the DC universe. But along the way, this apparently kind of morphed a little bit to really focus less on strictly females and more on just kind of the diversity that can be found in the modern Marvel universe. So you've got, you know, a Latina character in America Chavez, you've got a Muslim character in Kamala Khan, you've got a black character in Patriot, and you've got, you know, you have the Inhuman angle as well, filter, you know, coloring all of this. So you really have a diverse array of perspectives and viewpoints here. And that kind of seems to be an interesting take for a kid show. And like you said, interesting because it seems like it's being obvious enough that even the youngest viewer will probably pick up on some of the messaging here.
Right. And I think they, similar to the early episodes of X-Men, do a good job of establishing the conflict and kind of presenting the inherent, stupidity of the Inhumans that hate all the humans, or the humans particularly that hate all the Inhumans, that kind of showing that, you know, prejudice is bad. And that's kind of the same message that we got through X-Men. Kind of, you know, this is certainly filtered to a younger audience, but it doesn't seem to be aiming as young as DC Superhero Girls, no. Which I think are aimed at the very youngest, which is great, aimed at the very youngest children, or something even like Agents of Smash. Which
that's interesting,
though. I don't know who it was aimed at.
Because the DC Superhero Girls line kind of has different products for different age groups. I think the YouTube shorts are clearly aimed at a much younger audience, probably the youngest audience, like you said. And then you've got, but then you've got the books, which are, they have actual like chapter prose books that are kind of aimed at, you know, probably more like fourth and fifth grade type audience. And then you have the new animated series that's starting that's probably going to aim for somewhere in the middle of that, kind of the, you know, 6 to 8 year olds. So this is, they are kind of diversifying their approach with that line. Well, it'll be interesting to see if this Marvel Rising line mirrors that approach going forward.
Indeed. And with the focus on Inhumans, I think one area that I was curious to get Olivia's takes on this movie in general, but one area in particular that I did think a few times is when you're dealing with the Inhumans, you're dealing with references to the Terrigen Mists, mm-hmm. and what is the Kree engineering the Inhumans as a failed experiment to replace humans, and then coming back and wanting more humans to become Inhumans. A lot of sort of complex concepts that I wonder if it would be difficult to follow. So, I mean, and to be clear, Olivia is actually younger than the age that I think they're aiming this at. But what did Olivia make of this? Did she enjoy it, and did she follow it the whole time?
Oh, yeah, she followed it the whole time. But, like, stuff like that, she's still at that age where she doesn't really get hung up on the plots and the hows and the whims.
Right,
like,
right.
She kind of takes everything at face value still. So they said these things, and she ignored them and just, you know, went with the version of the characters that were portrayed on screen. She didn't really get hung up on Terrigen Mists and Kree and all that kind of stuff. But she definitely enjoyed the movie.
That's great. And that's really what matters the most for a project like this. I mean, these are not aimed at us. We like to see the ones that kind of tackle all ages. And as I mentioned earlier, I feel like this one, Nick, did a much better job than Agents of Smash, than Ultimate Spider-Man, than the rebooted Avengers show have done in terms of presenting characters that are interesting and dynamic and unique, but that don't that I never felt insulted watching this, basically, as I did at times during Agents of Smash with their characterization of She-Hulk and really everybody else on that show, during Ultimate Spider-Man at times in the early episodes, and even during the rebooted Avengers show where they had, you know, for instance, Hawkeye talks like an absolute moron in that. I liked what they did with these characters. I liked the fact that they had strong personalities, even if all the personalities didn't click with me personally. I think for kids, they all had distinctive personalities. There wasn't a sameness of characters here. It didn't feel like they were really like beating any jokes into the ground repeatedly. They would go to the well and then move on to the next one. I actually, against my thoughts of what I would think going in, given Marvel Animation's recent track record, with me anyway, I actually ended up enjoying this, and I especially thought, you know, I could see kids enjoying this one and following it and liking these characters, and I ended up liking several of these characters. Not all of them, but several of them. What about you, Nick?
Yeah, you know, Ms. Marvel and Squirrel Girl were both pretty good. Captain Marvel I wanted more of.
Mm-hmm.
Could have done without Inferno and all, you know, the other non-Ms. Marvel Inhumans, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, pretty good across the board. Patriot I felt like needed a little bit more to do and probably will get more in future, you know, future episodes or movies or however they're going to do that. And then you got America Chavez, who definitely that character was very thinly written. It was kind of a one-note thing, but
totally agree.
At least it was a character who acted distinctly from everybody else.
Right.
It wasn't like she just – it wasn't like these characters were all the same, which was our complaint with Agents of Smash and Avengers Assemble and things like that. There was some actual characterization going on here.
Yeah, I agree with that. And kind of along those lines as well, same for me. I thought Kamala and Squirrel Girl were very interesting and dynamic. Squirrel Girl probably will stand out the most to people watching this, I think, because of she's the Michelangelo of the group, for lack of a better term, the one with the charisma, the personality, the, you know, kind of dominates the screen when she's on. Kamala's great as the POV character. I thought that, to your point, Patriot and Quake both were kind of underwritten in terms of the audience isn't given much reason to care about them compared to the others. America Chavez is interesting because I did not like her character here. However, like you said, she was distinct and different. What I didn't like about her was she wasn't given enough backstory beyond that her parents died. She wasn't given enough time to really sink in and feel empathy with her character. And she's presented with kind of an abrasive edge at the beginning where she doesn't like any other characters and you're not really sure why anybody likes her. And I also thought they kind of, in lieu of character development, they kind of overpowered her. And I don't know what she's like in the comics, but they certainly made that last fight scene appear as if, you know, she was doing more than Captain Marvel was at the end in terms of doing damage on Hala and saving the day. So, but at the same time, again, distinctive character, and probably a lot of children that watch this are going to walk away with her as their favorite character. So overall, yeah. What did Olivia think of this? Who were her favorite characters coming out of this?
Well, her favorite character was Squirrel Girl, of course, because she thought she was funny. That's what all she would say, really, is that Squirrel Girl was her favorite part because she was funny, and that she also thought Captain Marvel was cool, but she wanted to see more of Captain Marvel. So maybe I'll let her watch some of these other ones whenever we have the time. Right now, you know, they're kind of at that age where once they find something, they kind of wear it out and watch it over and over again. And seeing as how I just bought Into the Spider-Verse on 4K, I'm gonna try really hard to make that be the thing that's worn out over the next 6 weeks or so.
Very good. We should also mention that included in this movie is Lockjaw, the dog with the tuning fork on his head.
I'm glad you mentioned Lockjaw, because it's actually one aspect of this I didn't like. Was the animation style itself, and I thought Lockjaw was probably the one that stood out the most. This was to me anyway, even more than Agents of Smash and Avengers Assemble, which have similar animation styles. This was the most anime-inspired animation style I've seen yet from Marvel. And it looked bad at times, like just the fluidity of it and everything. But, you know, that's a complaint that the movie ultimately was able to overcome for me.
You know, for whatever reason, it didn't bother me as much in this. I didn't notice it as much as you did. It certainly wasn't, you know, necessarily my preferred animation style of some of Marvel's animated movies from like a decade ago, but it didn't stand out to me in that way. But I can see what you're talking about to a degree. But what bothered me more than that, actually, the parts of this that I really didn't enjoy, really the only parts of this that I didn't get anything out of were I don't know about you, but I thought the music scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Killed the action for me.
Oh, well, they would do like the musical montage or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the entire climactic fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place with a modern pop song.
Yeah, pop song playing in the background.
Background.
Disney doing their integration, because I think that song was done by one of their current, you know, actresses who also sings and stars on one of their shows. And, you know, they're notorious for doing that. So...
You know, the problem with it is that it also sounded – it didn't sound like it was integrated into the movie. It sounded like somebody came in and like edited over top of the existing thing, and just kind of killed the mood, because maybe if it's earlier in the movie it could work, but for the big-time climactic fight scene and the conclusion of the movie, I thought it was out of place and quite frankly out of touch. But no, that's just – that's us that's out of touch. But that being said, I still enjoyed this much more than I thought I would. I mean, I can't give it a ringing endorsement for adults to just go out of their way to watch. But if you have kids, I would definitely recommend watching this. I think you can do a lot worse than watching Marvel Rising Secret Warriors with your kids. I think you'll get something out of it anyway. And you might learn some stuff about some characters like I think Nick and I did.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, with that being said, I don't know what else there is to say about this. Oh, I guess we should talk about performances. We always do with Off the Page, talk about performances. So any voice performances stand out to you? I thought, just off the top here, I thought Catherine Cavari as Kamala Khan.
Mm-hmm. That was the best one, obviously.
Milana Vaintrub as Squirrel Girl was awesome.
And that's another interesting one, because she's the one attached to do that New Warrior show on Freeform, or what will probably wind up being Disney Plus at this point, to play Squirrel Girl in live action as well.
Oh, awesome.
She's the well,
she did it.
She's the AT&T lady.
Wow, so she is. I just opened that up on Wikipedia.
No,
here.
Don't just go ahead and close it back down, bro. No, we don't need you too distracted during the podcast.
No, I thought she did a great job. I thought looking at this cast list here, Chloe Bennett obviously was really good as Daisy. She's natural at that at this point.
Yes.
And then the other one that I thought stood out was Mira Rohit Kubani as Kamala Khan's mom.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed those scenes. In fact, some of the best scenes in the entire movie to me were the scenes of Kamala and her mom. And I thought this actress, Mira Rohit Kubani, was a standout. She was authentic. You believed that she was meaning the words she was saying to Kamala, and you got the sense of a true bond between them in a way that a lot of superhero animated shows outside of, you know, Batman and stuff like that sometimes failed at over the years. Like, for instance, I think back to the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, and I never once believed in the Aunt May and Peter relationship. It never connected with me. It didn't feel genuine. It didn't feel real. And this relationship between Kamala and her mom certainly feels real and believable, and one that I invested in.
Yeah, I would echo all that. You know, those performances that you singled out were really good. The other ones weren't bad per se, but I think, again, we talked about some of these characters weren't really given either much nuance or much to do in this one, so it's hard to judge their performance fully.
And credit to D. Bradley Baker, who doubles as both Lockjaw the dog and Tippy Toe the squirrel.
Tippy toe the squirrel. There you go.
Yep. Well, with that being said, we're going to go ahead and take a break here at Place Be Nation. And as many of you may have noticed in recent weeks, the breaks are much more interesting than they have been in the past at times. Yeah. Be that a good or bad thing is up to the listener to decide. And we're going to give it another crack here when we come back from the break and at letting you know what's going on.
I feel like this has become the most anticipated moment of our show each week.
I feel like it, too. We've gotten more feedback about this in recent weeks than anything else. Even JR's appearances haven't gotten as much feedback recently
as us
trying to introduce the other shows at Place to Be Nation and Place to Be Nation Pop.
Yep.
So when we come back, we'll give it a try.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, comic book podcasting personality Greg Phillips here.
Mm-hmm.
We had a busy week on the pop feed, you know, with a little something for everyone.
A little something for everyone once again this week.
That's right. In the newest Hard Traveling Fanboys, that's us.
Hey, wait, Greg. Well, isn't the newest Hard Traveling Fanboys this episode that they're listening to?
Oh, that's right. So the newest Hard Traveling Fanboys, Greg and Nick, deliver a review of Marvel Rising, Secret Warriors. And they're joined by Nick's daughter, Olivia, via proxy.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. The great Andy Atherton is joined by Scott Criscolo and Miranda Berthold to give their takes on Captain Marvel as well. This, of course, the number one movie in America still, Nick, from Marvel Studios.
Upwards of $800 million at the box office worldwide at this point.
Which is interesting, because I was told on the internet that if you, quote, get woke, comma, you go broke.
That's the...
End quote.
That is the allegation.
That is what I was told, and to this point, it doesn't appear to have been proven true. But yes,
Greg,
Captain...
Greg, what's the first name of your favorite Flash, and is it Wally?
You know it is, Nick. You know it is.
Sips coffee.
In any event, they've got a great review of Captain Marvel out. Check that out. Jason Sherman has debuted a brand new podcast here. He's joined by Neil Trama and Andy Atherton in the premiere episode of PTBN E-Ticket Attraction. The trio dives right into an intense look at Disney's Magic Kingdom, a place that I went at the tender age of 7, Nick.
I went at 6, and I don't think I've been back since.
No, I
gotta be honest.
But I didn't love it.
I'm not in any hurry to go back. Like, you know?
They may have changed it since then. I remember when I was a kid, I was kind of underwhelmed.
Yeah, I
was a big fan of Busch Gardens.
Yeah, I like theme parks. I don't love them. I like them. And even as a kid, I remember all the Magic Kingdom stuff, you know, to my cynical 6-year-old self being lame. I was like, this is dumb. Why do I want to walk around and look at all this princess crap? Get me out of here.
You wanted a Hulk Hogan theme park.
And yet, well, that would be awesome. And yet, at age 6, I loved, like, Epcot. You know, that's just the weird kid that I was.
Well, nonetheless, I'm sure they'll get to all of those aspects on PTBN E-Ticket Attraction.
Yes, E-Ticket Attraction.
And while you're at PTB and Pop, be sure to stop by the Geek and Sassy Facebook page, mm-hmm. where you still have time, but just barely. And in fact, by the time you're listening to this, your time may have run out, where you can grab and complete a ballot for the second annual Sassy Awards, mm-hmm. make your voice heard in a number of categories. I, Nick, have already submitted my picks in the Sassies. I submitted those last week, and I feel that they were the right choices in every category.
And that's good. You obviously should submit a ballot for the Sassies, because if you don't, you're clearly a bad person. So there you are. Meanwhile, over at the PTBN Wrestling feed, we're going to continue our dip inside the vault with classic Where the Big Boys Play episodes. This time out, and by this time I mean last time from like 8 years ago, Chad and Parr finished their look at Great American Bash 1987. Meanwhile, in other Chad-related material, JT and Chad returned with a new Wrestling Warzone podcast as they break down the Raw and Nitro from 12-18-95, featuring more Santa Claus.
Remember Santa Claus, Nick? I sure don't.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Meanwhile, tell us about it, and that's good.
Yeah, they do. They were going to hear all about it.
Then Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
Jean-Pierre Lafitte, yep.
He was probably gone by then.
Probably so. Then you got this week's main event with Scott Crisolo, Steve Willey, and the Godfather Nate Milton breaking down Fastlane and starting to lay out their thoughts on WrestleMania. And they also deliver the newest classic TNA pay-per-view recap. And meanwhile, finally, in episode 4 of... In episode 4 of You Don't Know Billy Jack, Drew introduces Jordan to the classic Hennig-Bockwinkel time limit draw.
What you laughing at there, Nick?
I've been broken by a variety of things. The name of the show, which is the first time I've actually heard it or read it and said it out loud. And just the... never mind. I'll shut up now. And be sure to check out PlaceToBeNation.com as things are getting back up and running there with loads of written good content, Lord, to come as March rolls in. Written content will be picking back up in the days and weeks to come. So check back there. PlaceToBeNation.com. Buy the shirt.
Sweet Jesus. I have no idea what just happened. But finally... be sure to give a like to the PTBN Greatest Candy Tournament Facebook page.
My favorite.
So you can participate in daily polls as we determine which candy is indeed the greatest candy of all time. The polls also go out on Twitter. Your vote counts. In fact, just between the, well, let's face it, the two of us, you could actually vote twice if you vote once on Facebook and once on Twitter.
You work in the, you know, just like a liberal Democrat that you are, to be out there committing voter fraud.
Listen, Nick, I am just trying to make sure the people vote in their best interests. Mm-hmm. And in this case, their best interests include the Baby Ruth bar, which has been criminally undervoted in this tournament.
Has it even come up yet?
I think it did, and I think it lost already, in fact.
Well, that sucks.
Well, you know, Baby Ruths are great. I mean, it's chocolate, it's nuts. I mean, what else do you need in a candy bar? They get too fancy with all this other stuff. Oh, caramel. Who cares about caramel?
I care about caramel. Right. Caramel's wonderful.
Oh, get out of here with your caramel. It is fine.
Caramel is better than chocolate. There it is. There's my hot tip.
That is the stupidest thing anyone's ever said on this show, and that covers an astronomical amount.
Caramel over chocolate.
This is the hottest take you've ever had.
Caramel and peanut butter over chocolate. Both of those.
Peanut butter I can see people making an argument for. Caramel over chocolate is like, I mean, unless you're allergic to chocolate, I can understand it then.
I'm not allergic to it.
Nonetheless, folks, enjoy all the great shows here at PTBN Pop, PTBN Wrestling as well, and we hope you listen to everyone that we mention and give them all a shot and find out which ones are right for you. It'll be all of them.
Being inspired by the candy tournament, we ought to do a Cletus T. Judd tournament at some point in the near future here on the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Do you think people would go for it?
I don't think we would care if they did.
Great point. So how would we seed them? That's to be the biggest point of dissension. Obviously, she's got a butt bigger than Beatles as your number one seed.
Number one seed. Well, it depends on how many reasons you're going to have too. I mean, if you're just seeding them 1 to 32 or what have you, then that would be the number one seed. Or are you breaking it out into 4 8-team regions or 8-song regions?
Brother, the idea of Cletus T. Judd having 32 songs.
Oh, brother,
mind boggling.
You don't even know. You don't even know. Clearly.
Mm.
Do you remember that Toby Keith song, I Love This Bar?
Yes.
Do you remember the Cletus T. John song, I Love NASCAR?
No.
There you go. See?
Oh, Lord. Good Lord. Actually, you know, you mentioned, you bringing Cletus T. Judd, believe it or not, did spark an idea in me that maybe we need to do more comic book related tournaments over at our, on our neck of the woods. What do you think, Nick? No? Fair enough.
What neck of the woods is that?
Well, PTB and Pop / comics. Hashtag, hard traveling fanboys. That's what we're called.
Yeah, I am just looking at his first album, and Greg, right there, you already got some contenders there. You got Gone Funky, which is of course a parody of
Gone Country. Yes,
you've
yes.
got you've got Indian In-Laws.
Just based on title, that's got to be a one seed in some region.
You've got Refried Beans,
of course. Yes.
You've got Motel California.
Oh, that's lazy, even by Cletus standards.
You've got Please Take the Girl. And, of course, you've got Stinkin' Problem, which is, as we've discussed, a classic.
Yes, I admit, I've got a stinkin' problem.
Then his second album, of course, you've got If Shania Was Mine. You've got She's Got a Butt Bigger Than the Beatles.
Let me tell you why that works. Why that has to be the one seed? Because like, it's really one of the great lyrics he's ever written. Because the butt is the butt bigger than the idea of the Beatles? Is the butt bigger than the in terms of success than the success of the Beatles? Or is the butt bigger than the physical manifestation of all four Beatles together?
Or is it bigger than a Volkswagen Beetle?
Great point. Hmm.
You've also got Skull, the Grundy County Spitting Incident.
Which, of course, is a parody of the Grundy County Auction, right? By John Michael Montgomery.
Yes. You've got Cataract Style.
That's pretty good.
So you got all kinds of... You know. Oh, you even have a second parody of Sold called Stoled, the Copyright Infringement Incident.
Oh, Cletus was really struggling with material at that time. He's like, you know what? We got to do two parodies of the same song.
What else we got? What else we got? Every light in the house is blown.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Did I Shave My Back for This? A song that I know you have personal attachment to.
Mm. Well, that's real cute.
In any event, I'll stop naming Cletus T. Judd songs now.
Yes, please do. Now.
Oh, wait a minute. One more. You remember that Diamond Rio song, Unbelievable?
Yes.
How about She's Inflatable?
Wait, that was the song like, it's so unbelievable.
Yep.
Him and all. Him and all. Yeah. Yeah, that one. I don't remember the words, but that's how their voices do in the song. Yeah.
We're just going to spend the first 10 minutes of every second half of the show from now on doing the live read and then talking about Cletus T. Judd songs. And pretty soon, within like 3 weeks, we'll be canceled finally. So,
anyway, let's move on to our weekly look at the news and notes in the world of comics. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to move on to the rundown.
Welcome to the rundown. Where we talk some comic news. Welcome to the rundown. Where we talk about movies too.
I'm sorry, I got one more.
Oh my god.
You remember, remember Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood in Another's Eyes?
Oh, yes, that's a great song, yes.
How about In Another Size?
The Bob Dylan of his generation, Cletus T. Judd.
Oh,
all right. Go ahead. Weekly look at the news and notes, the rundown and all that stuff.
Yep.
All right, biggest news of the week easily is the shocking return of director James Gunn, writer-director James Gunn, to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. That's right. Marvel Studios reinstating James Gunn as the director of Guardians Volume 3, which he's already written, I believe. This will go in the pipeline behind his work on Suicide Squad 2, a.k.a. The Suicide Squad. He's already written that script as well, and he will direct that before Guardians 3. So we're still a few years off from this, at least. But I think I speak for you, Nick, when I say this was amazing news. Yeah. And the best possible news for comic book fans, because now we're going to get a James Gunn DC movie and then a James Gunn Marvel movie.
Yes, and you know, there were all those reports before his dismissal about him being heavily involved with overseeing kind of the next generation of Marvel Cosmic, whatever that was going to look like. And I'm hopeful that his return to Marvel is a full return to also being involved, you know, from a higher creative level, not just directing and writing, kind of helping to, you know, break story on some of these other films. So the one interesting aspect of this that I'll be very interested to see is, let's say The Suicide Squad is very well received and does very well. Will he be allowed, or will he even have the option to go back and forth and do ongoing work for both companies, or will he have to pick one over the other? And if he does, he's clearly picking Marvel, right?
I don't know. I mean, it depends. I think it depends on what challenges him more creatively. I think if he tells a story with Guardians 3 and he thinks there's more stories to tell with the Suicide Squad characters moving forward, I could see him choosing that direction if he has to choose. The other one is, what do the cast want to do? Maybe if Gunn wants to do Guardians 4, maybe Chris Pratt gets tired of doing it. Maybe Zoe Saldana wants to move on.
Well, he said previously that Guardians 3 is the end of his this version of the Guardians. He has said that. So whatever that means.
Well, interesting to see how it all plays out. And he and Dave Bautista, it looks like, if all goes as planned, will both be splitting universes, which is kind of cool. Maybe, Nick, this could even lead to our much-wanted amalgam movie. Huh?
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Now, of course, that would require DC to have a fully functioning movie universe by then, but they might get there. They might get there. So, with that said, let's stick with Marvel Studios and talk about the big movie trailer that dropped this past week. No, we're not talking about the new Quentin Tarantino film that's drawn a lot of discussions online, although that looked awesome, in my opinion. Oh. Nick, I don't know if you would agree.
Yes. Listen, you know, there are few things that I can imagine being more for me than a Quentin Tarantino movie set in the summer of 1969 involving Sharon Tate and Charles Manson, and also having Margot Robbie in it. It is hard to imagine anything that is more up my alley than that. So
I agree. And in my case, it has Bruce Lee in it. So
who is the guy playing Bruce Lee, by the way, in the trailer?
I don't know, but he's just like him.
I can't wait for your reaction when Brad Pitt's character whoops Bruce Lee's ass in that movie.
I know. I'm already bracing for that. There's been a lot of discussion. People were already roasting that on Twitter, by the way. But I'm holding out hope that there's more to it than meets the eye. Mm-hmm. But I really like the scene, though, that they have him on there saying, hey, good job. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about, of course, the trailer for Avengers Endgame that just dropped this past week. And Nick, this is a movie that I don't need a trailer for at all. It's like Star Wars at this point. We're going to go see it. Everybody's going to go see it.
I think you need
they're not lying.
I think you need trailers and posters just to like remind the casual fans that, hey, this is when the movie comes out, you know, but in terms of showing footage, no need.
And in this case, they mostly don't show you anything that you didn't already know going in. It's a great trailer. It's emotional. It's impactful. It shows us a glimpse of the Avengers all wearing the same costume, appearing to board a spaceship of some kind, or a time ship, if you will. We don't know. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it, Nick. It was awesome. It got me pumped. I was already pumped. I'm going to be there with bells on to watch this. We're going to be gathered together to watch this. So really looking forward to it, Nick.
One thing I'll ask you, do you believe that was Kate Bishop in the trailer with the Hawkeye scene?
I don't honestly even remember what you're talking about.
There's a shot of Hawkeye and a young girl both firing arrows at a tree in some sort of train. It looks like a training thing.
It looks like the Matt Fraction.
Kinda, so, yeah. It either could be, you know, his daughter from the previous films, or, you know, we are under the assumption, I think all of us, that his family was dusted by Thanos. So some people have theorized it could be Kate Bishop or a version of Kate Bishop.
Could be. I'm not going to say whether it is or isn't. I would lean more towards it being one of his kids that they introduced, but who knows? Could be Kate. Certainly there's nothing to say that it shouldn't be or couldn't be. Mm-hmm. I was excited about everything I saw there, man. I thought it looked great, and am excited to see what comes next in their war with Thanos.
And then, you know, whoever had that Captain Marvel Thor interaction idea must be a pretty smart guy, pretty decent guy, hell of a mind for this business.
Yeah, Kevin Feige does have a hell of a mind for this business. Quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not stopping there when it comes to our look at the MCU. No, 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 no. Because the next phase of Marvel films is going to include another new character introduction, and that is Shang-Chi, the Master of Kung Fu. And that movie has its director now, according to The Hollywood Reporter, in the form of Destin Daniel Cretton, who has signed on to direct it. He's a Hawaiian-born writer-director with several connections to current MCU personnel, having directed Brie Larson in Short Term 12 in The Glass Castle, Larson and Michael B. Jordan in the upcoming film Just Mercy, and is working with Ryan Coogler, who we know from Black Panther, on an autobiographical project called Miners. Says here that Cretton won out over other contenders, including Justin Tipping, Alan Yang, and Deborah Chow. So, I know that you don't give a single crap about martial arts or martial arts
films. Oh, my God. Here we go.
But and you will probably crap on me for daring to be excited about this ahead of time.
No, I will crap on you. I will crap on you for daring to be excited about it and then refusing to watch it once it's out.
No, 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 no. Don't spin it like that. I didn't refuse to watch it when it came out. I refused to watch it because you told me how much of a turd it was and mocked me for being excited about it in the first place. That's why I didn't watch it. Because I didn't want to give you the satisfaction.
Second season's good, though. Legitimately. Not just saying that to fuck with you. It's actually good.
Mm. Well, maybe one day I'll find out.
Maybe one day you will. Probably not, though. No, I don't know anything about this director. Shang-Chi is an interesting choice to lead his own film. Not just, I mean, I'm not saying that because of the martial arts aspect, but like, I know that obviously they're going to be able to bring some additional diversity to the MCU with the character of Shang-Chi, but like my perception of the characters when I was growing up was always that Iron Fist was a bigger deal in the comics than Shang-Chi was. So I know they've already done the TV show or whatever, but it makes me wonder if perhaps there wasn't plans to do an Iron Fist movie at some point and the TV show got in the way or what happened there. So just something that crossed my mind. I don't know.
Well, Cuba. Who knows?
I don't know much about Shang-Chi, to be honest with you. I know he was he briefly appeared in there was an Ultimate version of him that was in a one story arc of Ultimate Spider-Man, but I don't know anything else about him.
I've never encountered the character in my comic book reading, but I was more of a DC guy. I guess his equivalent would be Richard Dragon in DC.
I guess.
But yeah, I'm excited about this for the chance of it being a different movie, you know, different kind of movie, different flavor to the MCU, different style. Hopefully they get some of the fight choreographers involved in Into the Badlands involved in this one.
Oh, that would be awesome.
But anyway, that's that. That's all I got to say about that. Speaking of which, Nick, I know this doesn't have anything to do with our show or comic books, but did you hear the interview with the guy that was gonna that had written the script for the Forrest Gump sequel?
Yeah.
Am I crazy for being glad that it wasn't made?
No. Especially like, you know, the Jenny story of that first movie. When the first time you watch it, you're kind of like, hey man, maybe she'll get her life turned around. You're pulling for her the entire time in hopes that the story will end well for her. If the entire movie was going to be built around Forrest watching his kid waste away from AIDS, that is like, no one wants to watch that. Like, because there's no out. Like, there's no potential happy ending. That's going to end one way. You know, that sounds like a depressing ass viewing experience. That being said, however, I have actually read the sequel novel Gump and Company many years ago, and it's really good. Actually, it's really funny. But the novel version of Forrest Gump is a much different character than the Tom Hanks theatrical version of Forrest Gump. So a lot of that probably would have been lost in translation, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing that's been lost in translation, Nick,
mm-hmm.
is Kevin Sugihara's tenure as the head of Warner Brothers. And yes. It seems that it's coming to an end because the Warner Brothers CEO/chairman has exited the company after allegations of misconduct.
Favoritism towards an actress he was involved with, it says.
Yes, it says he apparent favoritism being shown to an actress, Charlotte Kirk, that he was reportedly in a relationship with. Sugihara's exit comes 14 days after he had been given additional responsibilities at Warner Brothers as part of the company's reorganization following its acquisition by AT&T.
Good Lord. Yeah, just go ahead and do that. Pop that in your Google machine.
Boy, that Kevin Sugihara. One, you know? Fine. CEO.
I think despite losing his job, he's doing okay for himself. I'll put it that way.
Yep. The rich get richer.
Good for him. You know, genuinely, good for that guy.
And good for Charlotte Kirk.
Presumably.
Anyway, Nick, Sugihara is out. He was supposed to be the great savior of Warner Brothers films a few years ago. Commitment to DC properties and all that. What are your thoughts on this? Any thoughts at all?
Not really. You know, we never really got a clear indication of who is steering the DC property ship over at Warner Brothers. So I don't know if this affects it or not. I genuinely don't. We shall see, I suppose.
We shall see indeed. Well, one of the projects that has been long lingering under the tenure of Kevin Sugihara is a Flash movie that has been announced and has been talked about and has been bandied about with various scripts. What seems like a revolving door of directors at this point that have come and gone over the years in a relatively short period of time, really. And recent reports indicate that Ezra Miller could have been on his way out because he is just not getting along with the guys that are in charge of the film right now.
Bye.
That, of course, being John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein, the script writers, who were once in negotiations to direct. They wrote a lighthearted script for The Scarlet Speedster, and that's the direction favored by the studio. But Ezra Miller wants to remain the Flash, but he wants the Flash to go in a darker direction. So in a last-ditch effort, he's described as being deeply committed to the character. He has gone so far as to write a new screenplay alongside comic book legend Grant Morrison as his co-writer.
Nope.
This is the latest compromise between Miller and Warner Brothers. The script could be submitted to the studio as early as next week, with time of the essence as Miller's holding deal on the film expires in May. This according to THR. Now, Miller does have some writing experience. He wrote The Truth according to Darren Wilson, a short film. He's portrayed the Flash in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, Suicide Squad, and Justice League. Warner Brothers officially announced the Flash being titled as Flashpoint at 2017 Comic-Con, but reportedly that is no longer the plan. And directors David Goyer, Sean Levy, David Dobkin, Seth Graham-Smith, Greg Berlanti, and Rick Famuyiwa have all been attached to the project and left at various points.
In all seriousness, why aren't they just letting Greg Berlanti do it?
Because
and let him do whatever the hell he wants to.
Because that's stupid, Nick, and nobody would ever want to see the TV version or the TV vision of the Flash brought to the
big
screen.
And presumably, whatever the hell he wants to do would be making Grant Gustin the theatrical Flash.
which would be a terrible idea because he's a television actor.
It's just fucking stupid. It's a stupid mindset. It really is.
Are you excited about the Morrison and Ezra Miller Flash? That sounds like the most for Nick Duke
no,
project.
It sounds like the biggest pile of horseshit I've ever heard of in my life. This won't happen. Like, does Morrison even have screenwriting experience?
I don't know. I'm not Grant Morrison's keeper.
There's no way the studio is going to pick this up, especially if it's – because, like, here's the thing. If the studio wants a lighter direction and they're giving Miller one chance to sell them on a script and he's writing it with Grant Morrison, there is going to be so much batshit insane stuff that's going to go over the head of studio execs. There's no way this gets approved. And with that, bye, Ezra Miller. We'll be seeing you.
Are you ready to put on the tombstone gif?
Bye.
Bye.
Yep. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. And on the topic of Grant Morrison, can he please go ahead and step into the next phase of his shitty Alan Moore imitation by just disappearing from public life altogether for the most part? That would be nice.
I'm having trouble finding any credits on IMDb beyond creator credits on stuff for him as a writer anyway. So
please just fade off into obscurity and do your stupid little creator owned projects and just go away. That's my feeling on Grant Morrison. Just go away.
You've got a lot of hate in your heart, Nick.
That's true.
I think you just need to take a chill pill or a big hit of LSD and move on with yourself. Accept what Grant Morrison is giving you.
What is he giving me?
He's giving you a shot at seeing The Flash on the big screen.
I'm assuming I've already seen The Flash on the big screen and it sucked.
Well, I can't disagree with you there, but we'll have to see. We'll have to just let it play out and see where it goes, Nick.
No, we won't.
I think we will. I think we will. You need to have a little power of positivity in your life, Nick, right?
Mm-hmm. Can we move on?
No, I like sticking on this topic. I want to hear a little bit more.
I don't have any more to offer you on this topic. I want Grant Morrison and Ezra Miller to go away. Go do other things that aren't involved with the DC Universe would be my preference.
DC Universe, you say?
I did say that. My God.
DC Universe is an outstanding app that you can get on your phones, your tablets, your televisions even. And DC Universe has a little show called Titans you may have heard of that has been talked about here on this here show. Well, Titans is we recently heard that they cast their Deathstroke. The character Deathstroke, Slade Wilson, familiar to all of us. They found their Slade Wilson and his name, which everyone knows, is
S.I. Morales.
The following S.I. Morales. Yes. S.I. Morales, who is known, of course, for his roles in such projects as La Bamba, which I've seen, Fast Food Nation, which I have not seen.
Did he play the lead in La Bamba? Who played the lead in La Bamba?
No, he did. That was Lou Diamond Phillips.
That's right.
And he has a major role in the recent Superfly.
La Bamba.
Richie Valens. You know who else was on that plane with Richie Valens?
Eddie Guerrero.
No! No! That plane crashed and they'd all die.
I was mostly referencing The Rock doing the Obama bit.
Oh, yeah. But no, it was the Big Bopper. One of the great names in our business. Anyway, this isn't about the Big Bopper. This is about Deathstroke. And I don't know much about this actor, Nick. I'd have to go back and – I know he's been in some Netflix series and stuff that I haven't watched, but he kind of looks Deathstroke-ian, has the silver hair and whatnot. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the look of this guy is great, although I must admit I don't recall seeing him. I have not seen La Bamba nor Superfly, though I'm open to seeing Superfly. There's a small part of me, even though I knew it wasn't going to happen, that is kind of bummed they're not letting Manu Bennett do it.
Yeah.
You know,
I can agree with that.
But I can't complain too much because, like I said, this guy has the look. Interesting that, like, in the last, 3 years, this will be the third actor to play Deathstroke in live action. Between Bennett's return to Arrow, Joe Manganiello in the post-credit scene for Justice League, and now this guy. So, busy time for the character of Deathstroke the Terminator.
That's right. Well, Deathstroke the Terminator also has a son, a couple of sons, actually.
This is really one cool, of them. I don't know a fucking thing about this kid, but it's a cool idea nonetheless. Continue.
Yeah. Deathstroke's son, Jericho, mm-hmm. who was a member of the Teen Titans in the comics, has been cast in the show as well, and he has been cast in the role of YouTube star Chella Mann. Mm-hmm. Now, for those that don't know, Joseph Wilson, a.k.a. Jericho, is left mute after his father fails to rescue him from having his vocal cords severed by assassins. Jericho has the ability to possess someone by making eye contact. He has telepathic abilities as well. And this guy, Chella Mann, is a deaf person. And so they are really going for authenticity with their casting of Jericho, a deaf actor, to play a character who
I don't think Jericho himself
has very
deaf,
similar.
Right. He just communicates via sign language.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think he has some telepathic abilities too, or at least has technology maybe that allows him to do that. But yeah, so Jericho has been cast, and I agree with you. I think that's really cool. They're going outside the box to find someone that's got the same sort of outsider nature that Jericho has in the comics, because he is a not really a chip off the old block in terms of he's not a lot like his dad. He's trying not to be like his dad, in fact, and so that's going to be kind of cool, I think.
Indeed.
And you're excited about that, yes?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know nearly as much about the character of Jericho as you do. You know, you're more of a Deathstroke aficionado than I am, but I'm open to this. I thought Titans was surprisingly good, and I'm hoping that season two can fix a lot of the issues I had with season one, namely pacing, a lack of focus on the characters that were actually interesting at times. In favor of focusing on characters like Starfire who weren't. Yeah, so I have high hopes for Titans season two. I think it can be that kind of like that situation we see so often where you go watch the first movie of a series and you think it's good, but you can see all the potential for the sequel to be even better. I think that's what Titans season two has the ability to wind up being.
And yes, sign language is of course a huge part of Jericho, so going to be fun to see, I think, and hopefully, I know this is this kid's first acting experience, so hopefully he delivers. But I think this is a good move by DC to go in this direction. Mm-hmm. So moving on from that, next up on our little news agenda is sticking with DC and going to the comic book side. We've got a couple of things going on here. One of which is that, according to a report here on Newsarama and elsewhere, DC is hiring a managing editor to oversee its comics publishing division. Although a new position, the title managing editor was previously held in the 1980s for Dick Giordano, who was later promoted to vice president / executive editor. This position will oversee the schedule for all five of its active publishing lines, DC, Vertigo, Black Label, Inc., and Zoom, as well as other projects under its new publishing initiatives grouping, which it approximates at 850 books. The hire for this position will work with each line's executive editor on scheduling, talent assignments, and freelancer pay. Interesting, Nick.
Yeah, this is interesting. I must admit to reading the headline before I actually read the story on this one and assuming it was much more exciting than it actually is, because the story makes it sound like it's strictly a logistical position, like you're kind of overseeing scheduling and financial matters. It does not make it sound like this managing editor is going to have much editorial oversight, which was my thing, is I wanted somebody – I was hoping it would mean somebody who was going to essentially oversee the vision for the DC universe as opposed to Dan DiDio. But, you know
– from reading this article, it seems like the biggest from a creative standpoint would be talent assignments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big thing that comes on here, working with executive editors on assigning talents to books. So
yeah, that's a big thing. But as we know, if certain individuals get bugs up their asses about bold new directions, they'll just –
character
force changes to the talent lineup regardless of what the plans are. So Hopefully DC can get its house in order at some point from a creative standpoint, but I'm not holding my breath for that to be anytime soon.
In our opinion, because a lot of folks are loving the current direction, I guess.
That's fine. They have a right to that opinion, even if they're wrong.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't say much. I've been reading recently, but man.
No, but I would argue there's a reason for that.
Yeah. One book that is getting a lot of praise, I haven't read, but I've heard nothing but good things about from people that I trust, like Todd Weber and Russell Sellers, is Hawkman, the book by Robert Venditti and Brian Hitch that has apparently done what very few people have ever been able to do and has made Hawkman understandable and relatable for an audience. Unfortunately, Brian Hitch, the artist, is leaving the title after May's issue number 12 will be his final issue, and he will be followed on by artist Will Conrad. Hitch says he is sticking with DC, has already agreed to do two more projects with the publisher, both set to debut this year. I haven't read Hawkman, Nick, and I know you haven't either, but kind of cool to see Brian Hitch recover from what was a kind of disappointing run, I think, on JLA.
And then also Justice League as a writer. But he was in charge of Justice League.
That's right.
Rebirth.
And so, and kind of rebounding, getting back to his roots as an art man, and certainly a storyteller alongside Robert Venditti. Sounds like they've been a perfect pairing, man. I'm looking forward to reading this at some point, perhaps in a long book hunt down the line, once they get this up on DC Universe.
Yeah, or even Hoopla, which we have access to. Yeah, lots of stuff. Again, having not read the book, I know I've always been a fan of Hitch's work from an artistic standpoint, so good to hear that he's had another acclaimed run, and I'm interested to see what he does going forward. He's still DC exclusive and apparently has two pretty major projects in the pipeline, so let's see where that goes from here.
Yes, let's. Well, this last item on our agenda tonight concerns a guy that really you will have more information on than me, Nick, given your work on the renowned Marvel Age podcast here at Place to Be Nation.
I don't know if it's renowned. Who's it renowned by?
Sources.
Report colons.
That's right. Because legendary anchor Joe Sinnott, and I apologize right now if I'm not pronouncing his name correctly. I'm just sounding it out. Sinnott, or Sinnott, has formally retired after 69 years in the comic book industry, Nick, an incredible run. This was announced by his son, Mark, coinciding with the inker's final Sunday Amazing Spider-Man strip.
Which I didn't even know that thing was still going. That's crazy.
Jolton Joe Sinnott. He is 92 years old.
That's awesome.
He worked for Marvel for 69 years.
That's awesome.
Marvel, Atlas, and Timely. And incredible run. Incredible run by any standard. And he has worked on Amazing Spider-Man strip for 27 years, following his first retirement as a full-time contracted Marvel artist in 1992. Nick, I think both of us are, frankly, to be big comic book fans, rather ignorant in the art skill of inking.
Yes.
But I do know from everything I've read online that Joe Sinnott is considered the gold standard of his era for inking.
Yep.
And particularly was a favorite of Jack Kirby during the iconic Fantastic Four run. And so big news here from Marvel.
Obviously, yeah, absolutely. His work definitely stands out, as you mentioned, during that early Fantastic Four stuff. And just the longevity is impressive, not just to last at Marvel from 1961, the early days, all the way up through 1992, which would have been around the commercial, you know, the absolute commercial peak of Marvel. But then after leaving full time in 92 to continue doing work on Spider-Man for another 27 years, just what an amazing career. 69 years in the comic book industry. Outstanding. Congratulations to Joe Sinnott.
And with that said,
if you go Sinnott and I go Sinnott, then we've got all the bases covered.
That's right. That's right. Now, what if it's sign it?
Well, quite frankly, I'd suggest that. I don't know what I would suggest.
Well, that's the end of the rundown, folks. Let's move on to a segment where we talk about what we've been reading and what we've been watching. Mm-hmm. A segment that we like to call Reading and watching.
Mm-hmm. Reading and watching. What you been reading and watching?
What you been reading and watching?
Well, Nick, what you been reading?
Nothing.
I, too, have read nothing. But, I have purchased Doomsday Clock number nine, and plan on reading it as early as this weekend.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it.
Well, with that being said, let's move on to what we've been watching. And anything outside of our usual for you, Nick?
Not that I can think of, no.
David Sunday and I watched episode 2 of Doom Patrol on the DC Universe app.
There you go.
Very enjoyable episode. I will admit that I did nod off a little bit towards the end, but not really in a judgment of the episode itself. I woke myself back up and saw the great conclusion. It's a really strong show, great performances. Brendan Fraser, in particular, is killing it on this show.
Brendan Fraser beat the Scorpion King.
He did, and the Scorpion King got a tiny ding-a-ling.
That was a special effect for the movie.
And Alan Tudyk is great on here. I don't know the actress's name, but Crazy Jane is awesome. It's a really good show. Everybody is well cast. The action is really good. The special effects are really good. The comedy is great. So check out Doom Patrol on DC Universe. We're enjoying it. All right. Other than that, I did watch another movie, but it wasn't comic book related. I watched two movies. I watched The Gift, starring Jason Bateman.
I was wondering, because you referenced that the other day on the phone. I was like, you must have just seen that recently. How was it?
You know, it's pretty good, actually. I was surprised that I liked it the way that I did, but it was like, you know, it was kind of, I like Jason Bateman. I like him in general in movies.
Mm-hmm. Master Bateman, of course.
It was a different role from him. He's a little bit, got a little bit of a Shades of Grey thing for a while, and it's a different side of Jason Bateman than I've seen. I enjoyed the movie, and I thought Rebecca Hall gave a really strong performance in it.
That Rebecca Hall is one fine piece of ace.
But you don't speak from experience.
I do not, sadly.
So I thought it was quite good. Joel Edgerton, I think, directed it and starred in it as the sort of opposite of Bateman in the movie, and really good stuff. Mm-hmm. So there that is. All right. Let's move on to the CW-verse, shall we, Nick?
We shall.
I started trying to catch up on Supergirl. I only got two episodes caught up, I think.
I'm caught up on Supergirl. So
completely caught up on Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to try to, while we kill time here, I am going to try to pull up the most recent episode that I watched, which this is not doing a good job of explaining to me until I scroll down here. I believe that would be the last one that I watched was What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way, which I proceeded with Menagerie. And I thought of these two episodes, I thought What's So Funny was much better than Menagerie. I thought Menagerie was a pretty crappy episode, to be honest with you, with bad CGI and uninteresting characters largely, although I was a fan of the actress playing Menagerie. What's So Funny I thought was really good for the most part. Lots of moving parts here. Manchester Black was really good, continues to put on a strong performance. The Hat is a new character that I don't know anything about, if he's from the comics or not, but he's really good, very entertaining. Good episode with What's So Funny.
Yeah, I would agree. I enjoyed that episode when I saw it last. Like I said, I'm caught up, so I'll withhold most of my thoughts until you get a chance to do so as well. But suffice it to say, the most notable thing that has occurred is I have seen the first episode of John Cryer as Lex Luthor, and to share my thoughts in brief, it's better than I thought it would be. It is not what I would call good. mainly because it seems like the writers of the show and the episode can't really decide what their take on Lex is. Is it a mostly serious and straightforward, you know, menacing one? Is it a comedic one? Is it a weird combination of all of these? The jury is still out on that. But there are aspects of the character and his plot going forward that are revealed near the end of that episode that have me somewhat intrigued and I think will put a smile on your face in particular.
Wow. Wow. Nick Duke admitting that he may have possibly been wrong about something.
Yeah, at this point, like, the performance, I think my problem with the performance in this episode was I don't buy him when he's trying to be menacing, but I appreciated it that it was there. But then every time he would be menacing, they would undercut it a few seconds later with a shitty John Cryer joke. And that, you know, that is my concern, is that it's going to be the constant back and forth throughout the rest of the season, which is going to become infuriating. It's no Chris Klein. I'll put it that way. It's not even close to Chris Klein.
Ugh. What is at this point?
My God. We'll talk about that in a second. Go ahead.
All right. Arrow.
Yeah.
The most recent episode of Arrow, titled Training Day, aired last week, March 11th. And in that episode, assumes as they operate. So that they are with the SCPD, but they kind of form their own task force that essentially gets them back to status quo as Team Arrow, going out on the streets, kicking butt in costume, doing things of that nature. We get some really good stuff with the flash forwards as Mia and William work together to try to uncode Felicity's message to them. And in fact, they find her message at the end of this episode and hear what it has to say to them, which is basically telling them to get out of Star City, leave it behind, and never look back. And of course, being the children of Oliver and Felicity, they're not going to listen to that. They're going to go right into trouble. So we also get what I thought, oddly enough, was maybe alongside the fast forward stuff, the most interesting aspect of this episode, which was Laurel visiting Slabside to uncover the mystery of who killed Ricardo Diaz, because Ben Turner, a.k.a. Bronze Tiger, has information for her on that note. And also, we get a really cool reveal about the character of Connor Hawke that I didn't see coming and that instantly makes him more interesting to me.
We had started to wonder, you know, because when the character of Connor Hawke was first introduced on Legends of Tomorrow a few years back, it was portrayed as the grown-up version of Diggle and Lila's young son. But then when Barry affected the timeline and their son became a daughter, and then Connor popped up again this season, we were like, wait a minute, how does that work? And here we kind of get that explained to us, which is a cool – I liked it. I like this dynamic.
It's going to be very interesting to see moving forward how this all plays out on Arrow because, as I've said with every topic we talked about today, but in particular with this, I think adding that Bronze Tiger element of having a dad that was a supervillain and then having another dad who was a superhero – how does that affect you? I think that's an interesting aspect to explore. Michael J. White is my dude. I'm always going to mark out for him appearing on the episode. And then the big twist at the end that we find out of who killed Diaz and the confrontation between Laurel and that character. I thought it was great, man. I never thought I would enjoy the character of Laurel Lance, but they have really gotten me with this kind of.
Who do you think the ultimate – like throwdown showdown is going to be with as we build to the season finale? Is it Dante or is it this other character that you're talking about?
I think it's ultimately Dante because I think it's going to be revealed to be a situation similar to what we saw in the comics with son of a bitch. I've forgotten the name of that character.
Shadow and Amico.
Yes. And then, who is the guy? That's the dad in the comics.
Oh, Simon
LaCroix.
Simon LaCroix. There you go.
Yeah. So that's
which I believe they've already introduced a version of on Arrow, but
they have, yes, very briefly. He was kind of a throwaway villain in an episode and hasn't popped up since, but he's still alive technically.
Right. Okay.
So I think the big throwdown is going to be with Dante because Adrian Paul is a big name actor and all that.
Right.
But
he's next season.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be.
Although at this point, Greg, it almost feels like they're laying it on so heavy that it might, that it's starting to feel like misdirection. It's starting to feel, perhaps that's the WWE viewer in me, where it's like, if you hint at something so obviously for so long, that must mean you're going the other way.
Right.
So we'll see.
Indeed we shall. Tuesday night brought us a brand new episode of The Flash. March 12th episode of The Flash. And this is an episode titled Failure is an Orphan. This involves, of course, Eobard Thawne in the future warning Nora that they have got to stop Cicada because a new timeline is trying to push its way into being and bring something, quote, really big with it. Nora and Barry encounter a metahuman who is at the scene of the incident where Barry has his last conflict with Cicada and fails to stop him, or does stop him, whatever happens. So Nora is dead set on helping Barry convince Cicada to give up his evil ways. And to the shock of the viewers everywhere, Nick, Barry finds a way, thanks to a wonderful scene with his surrogate dad, Detective Joe West. Having him back on the show is awesome. Mm-hmm. That scene was the best in the episode to me. Him and Barry having that heart-to-heart. It was right, reminded me of season one. Barry comes out, actually convinces Cicada, played horrifically.
I was about to say.
By Chris Klein.
As we've said so often this season, for all the good in this episode, it feels like it was almost entirely undone by Chris Klein having to attempt to emote in this episode. I mean, just brutal, dude. Borderline unwatchable. It is. I don't feel like I'm being hyperbolic in saying it is the single worst recurring element of The Flash they've ever had. Like, it is.
By a wide margin.
It is just. Like, it is so bad that if Danielle is ever in the room with me, it makes me feel stupid for watching it. Like, it is embarrassingly bad.
Yep. It is, and there's, it's shockingly, this is a former movie star. This is a guy who has been in big-budget Hollywood movies, and he's putting out performances like this.
Who did he play in that shitty Street Fighter movie?
He played Charlie, I think, the friend of Colonel William Guile.
Mm.
Colonel William Guile. And yeah, just a horrible performance for him. But they convince him otherwise, only to discover that Nora's tampering with the timeline has had unintended consequences. In that the Cicada they thought was the Cicada wasn't really the Cicada after all, and there's another Cicada.
Have you seen the Street Fighter movie, Greg?
Nick, I have seen it, and you know why I've seen it.
Yes. Now, let me ask you this. I know there's no way it's good, but I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now, and there's something about Neil McDonough as Bison that makes me want to watch it.
Now, yeah, okay. Yes, he goes over the top, and he's good.
Okay. But now, you see, you're not dispelling this in me.
He's good. I'm not going to take that away. He's always good in everything.
Michael Clark Duncan as Balrog? That's pretty good casting.
You have to understand how this movie is shot, though.
Okay.
And Kristen Crook as Chun-Li is fine.
Okay.
But, again, it's how it's shot. It's how it's written. It's so bad. It's one of the worst.
Robin Shaw is in it. Liu Kang. Who does he play?
I don't remember. I just remember the movie sucked, Nick. What do you want from me?
I want you to tell me about this movie that you've seen.
Why don't you watch it? That's a good idea. Why don't you watch it, Nick, and report back to us next week?
No, okay, why don't you watch Iron Fist and report back?
That's you're comparing an hour and a half long movie to a 10 to 12 hour long Netflix.
An hour and a half of my free time is equivalent to roughly 10 to 12 hours.
Oh, that's the stupidest thing you've said since that idiotic caramel and chocolate thing you said earlier.
Continue.
Anyway, I really like this episode other than Chris Klein as Cicada. And the arguably overpowered new Cicada that is faster than the Flash, based on how she avoided his lightning strike, or faster than lightning anyway.
I think the implication was that she has some of the old Cicada's powers where, like, when he throws the lightning, it probably slows down. Like, she's able to... Dampening of some sort.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Fair enough. Fair enough. In any event, this was better than it should have been given that Cicada was involved. And so I am excited to see the truth come out, apparently, moving forward based on the previews from Nora. So what did you think of this episode, Nick?
Overall, I guess I liked it. But, man, it's hard to say that because it just... You know, normally Chris Klein's job is to stand there and grimace and growl and be intimidating or whatever, and he's bad enough at that, but this had him trying to be emotional, and it just...
Because he still talks in that same stupid
voice, yes.
Batman.
I was going to say, I don't want to hear anybody ever bitch about Christian Bale's voice ever again if they're watching this season of The Flash. Like, this is the worst voice of any, you know, it's just terrible. I mean, I like the episode, I guess, but, like, hopefully now... We're done with Chris Klein and we can move forward. But I am worried.
You mean, hopefully right now we're done with Chris Klein.
That was your Triple H voice. But it was kind of your Undertaker voice.
That's what he's doing, basically.
But I am very concerned that the climactic bit of this season is actually going to see him come back to talk down the new Cicada. And I'm dreading that already.
My little daughter is one of my creatures of the night. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He sucks, but the show is good. Anyway. Oh, Joe. They need to do a whole they need to do an episode that's nothing but Barry and Joe doing stuff, doing activities. Anyway.
Building crafts together.
That's right.
Making birdhouses.
Mm-hmm. Going to the Catalina wine mixer. In any event, that's it for the run or the week reading and watching, whatever the hell. I'm looking down at the floor in a recently installed glass clock in the ground that I have here, Nick. Mm-hmm. And the glass clock is telling me that we got about a minute on there. So time for the wrestling minute. And boy, WrestleMania season sure is kicking into high gear. We're getting match announcement after match announcement after weeks of no match announcements.
Another reason why I hate the two pay-per-views in between the Rumble and Mania, because it artificially compresses the build to Mania, because it feels like, it feels like all that. I don't know. It's weird.
We've gotten nothing that we weren't really expecting to this point, except the big news of Kurt Angle's retirement match coming against Constable.
Oh, God.
Baron Corbin.
They are trying so hard to make Baron Corbin a thing. And, like, I'm not saying the dude... I'm sure there is something appealing about him to someone. And he is certainly capable of getting people to dislike him. But I would argue that it's more of the proverbial X-Pac heat at this point than anything else. He is... Mm. He kills just about... In an era where everybody, where the in-ring product is probably as good or better than it's ever been before... He is the rare exception who seems to be kind of regressing in the ring and yet still being promoted. I don't see it, Greg. Explain it to me.
Well, here's my thought on it.
Other than him being tall, like, and he's, because his physique isn't really even that impressive.
I think there's two aspects that to discuss here. One is Corbin himself. The other is why Corbin is Angle's opponent. Corbin himself, I think they like because of his size, obviously. They like because he's hated. He gets booed, which is... you know, difficult to achieve at times in the modern era. And I think they like that. Now, they don't take into account that is this a, you know, you can get into the nitty gritty of is there good heat or bad heat or whatever. I would argue that in some cases there is bad heat. And I think that in Baron's case, it comes off that way at times where people just don't want to watch him. The idea of a great heel is you want to watch him get his ass kicked. I think we've seen Corbin get his ass kicked plenty of times now.
He feuds with every babyface on the roster simultaneously
and loses most of the time. So, and the other aspect of why him then for Kurt Angle's retirement. And I think the answer to that is quite simple. I think the answer to that is that I believe the WWE folks see what I see on Raw, which is that unfortunately Kurt Angle, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, despite what you may hear on the internet, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, is washed. I mean, he looked on Raw. Now, granted, he's in there against an absolute stud in Chad Gable, but it was hard to watch that match, Nick.
Okay, in that case, then why put him in there with Baron Corbin?
The answer to that is I think they're going to make it a very quick squash match. I think Kurt's going to come in there. I think he's going to destroy Baron and tap him out.
Let's hope so, because I am not excited about the prospect of an extended match between these two.
And there's also still the chance, we have to acknowledge, that they swerve us a week before Mania and have Cena come out and trash Corbin and do Cena and Angle, which probably would be a good match, because Cena would know how to work around Angle's limitations at this point. Right. So that's my thoughts on that. On SmackDown side, we had another good SmackDown, really good SmackDown with a great gauntlet match as the Kofi Kingston story with Vince McMahon continues. And Daniel Bryan's another good example of drawing heat, but people still seem to want to watch him and still seem to want to see him get his ass kicked. So good shows this week, Nick, for the most part. I mean, Raw had two or three great segments, a great match with Seth Rollins and Drew, and a bunch of crap in the middle.
There you go.
Well, that's been the Wrestling Minute and some change.
It has been. I think we're a little over, as we often are, but that's okay. We're going to end the show, Greg, as we often do, as we do every week now, with a little musical number from our good friend, WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross. And so, you know, this week, as we discussed earlier in the rundown, we got the momentous announcement of James Gunn returning to the Marvel Cinematic Universe to direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And when that news broke, it made me think about all the great, you know, moments from those first two Guardians of the Galaxy movies. And those are both films that are very well regarded for their use of music, their use of 70s and 80s music in particular, in the context of the film. And it just made me remember that first trailer for the first Guardians and the song that was playing in the background. And I thought, you know, why don't we get good old JR to give his take on the classic Hooked on a Feeling. So, Mr. Ross, take it away.
Well, you know, Nick, thank you very much for that introduction. You know, the first time that I heard this song wasn't in a damn movie. Certainly wasn't in Guardians of the Galaxy, although I'm very proud of one of my greatest signees, Dave Bautista, and his work that he did in that movie. Very proud of Dave. We are. We're very proud of him here at the podcast. But when I first heard that song, it was on the AM radio station driving in Norman, Oklahoma, with my buddies. We were just leaving the frat house, and this song came on the radio, and we sang it to the top of our lungs. And it sounded a little something like this. Irga chucka, irga, irga, irga chucka, irga, irga, irga chucka, irga, irga, irga chucka, irga, irga. You know, I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's all right. I'm hooked on a feeling. And you know, I am high on that wacky tobacco, not on that funny medicine. I'm high on believing that you are in love with me. You know, your lips are as sweet as candy. It tastes, stays on my mind. Girl, you have got me thirsty. Which, at my Twitter account, at JRsBBQ, I understand thirsty is quite a popular term amongst the young people. I don't understand it, but that's okay. I'm just an old guy. Maybe I'm out of touch. Maybe the internet's right about me. Maybe I'm out of touch at this point. Anyway, for another cup of wine, got a bug from you, girl. And I don't need no cure for it, quite frankly. I just stay affecting, if I can say for sure, all the good love when we're alone. Keep it up, girl. Yeah, you turn me on. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you are in love with me. All the good love, now, when we're all alone. Keep it up, girl. Yeah, you turn me on. I'm hooked on a feeling. High on believing that you are in love with me. I said I'm hooked on a feeling, damn it. And I am high on believing, quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, that you are in love with me.